can't be serious, man. You cannot be serious!
We have sitting opposite us the main man, of the main voice man in Australasia and all other places, but we're not quite introducing him yet because Phoebe has turned up at last, and but she's got another job, of course. She's the not the gossip columnist. She is a very, very respected reporter at the Sunday Herald Sun, and she is in here just to have a chat to us quickly. We last week, Don, we mentioned that there's some, I don't know what you've got to do to get onto the A-list of being a celebrity.
Power couples.
Yeah, well...
did you write... Johnny, you're producing this. Can I now speak to Fiona?
Well...
Fiona.
Yes, Don.
Were you involved in the power couples?
I didn't do the power couples list. My name was on it. I have to say my name was on it, but there were four names on all the lists, but each of us compiled certain lists ourselves.
Okay, because the reason I asked this, because he sprung it on me last week about the power couples and he's gone through them, and I incidentally, or it so happened that I was watching two documentaries on power couples in England.
Get on with it.
Shut up. And I just wondered what these how these people operate, because there was a lot of infidelity in the power couples in England. Now, these people, do they stay together for the sake of the position or whatever they hold? They haven't got a real relationship?
Okay, I think... I will talk. So we are talking about the Herald Sun has been doing a series of lists over the past couple of weeks of power couples, rising stars, young entrepreneurs.
Oh, really?
There's been a whole set of lists that we've published, and power couples was the first one actually that we launched with. The reason why we put it together was really just to
create
talk
interest.
A create interest, but B, to highlight some of the partnerships in Melbourne that perhaps was, were made up of two parties that both have, perhaps you would say, equal amounts of influence in their various spaces. So that's how the list came together. And
the one that I saw in England, the documentary, went back, and I'll tell you who it was, Lord Mountbatten and his wife, and Princess Michael and Prince Michael. And when you talk, they're in the royal circle.
Talking about Melbourne power couples.
Shut up, will you?
What
we're trying to do is emulate what happens over there.
Well, we don't really have royal couples here,
Don. I understand. So we go for second best. Now, their infidelity is just...
We go for our power couples.
Will you shut up?
You've got to work with what you've got in your own town.
Well, we haven't got...
Well, why don't we import Princess Grace of Monaco?
We've got nothing, in other words. You're just they don't even know where Australia is overseas.
But this is for local consumption.
Then there's Melbourne.
John, honestly, if we do a list of grumpy old footballers, I'm putting you at the top.
Yeah, good luck to you. That's all right. I could go on a lot of other lists too, Fiona.
Now, I noticed that in the power couples, you're covering all non-binary people, trans...
Really?
Well, they've covered the lot.
Did you?
We've got to be politically correct.
Give me who you got. So you've got to be politically correct.
The lists are supposed to be a representation of this city.
Are you getting told what to do by...
No.
Well, why have you got to put in... You've got to be politically correct.
You don't have to put in anyone or any person.
It's just a tongue-in-cheek aside, Don.
The lists are supposed to be reflective of this city. So it would be ridiculous not to, be putting in...
Trans people if they were a couple.
Exactly. Well, why not?
I mean, why not? Because they're 1% of 1% of the
community. Did Mr. or Mrs. Joyce get in?
It is based on Melbourne people.
Oh, jeez. Yeah. Well, they have got in.
The lists have been very interesting.
So the number one power couple last week, I think, were Anne Peacock, I think, and Jeff Brown, who we all know. I think all of us know them. And then it went from there, and it got right down to people I'd never heard of. And then there was So it's going well.
Well, there are many other lists we could have done. As I said, we've done sort of a selection of lists, and I think there's other topics we could have covered. I did one which I really enjoyed doing, which was young entrepreneurs talking about people coming through the ranks and having
terrific far more
success
relevant
with the businesses that they've launched. And I do think that was – I would like to actually do more in that space, talking about the people coming through the ranks, coming up, those people who perhaps we're not talking enough about, but who are really making their mark in the city.
It's only relevant, Don, if the readers like reading about, people like reading about the drugs and the sex and the rock and roll and the A-listers and all that. They don't give a stuff necessarily about entrepreneurs, but if someone gets there on the meritocracy and not because it's a quota system, that's what it's about.
Now, Miss Byrne.
Oh, Don. Yes.
Did you watch 7plus this week? Last week.
Well, yes.
You did. And what did you watch?
I watched 7plus a lot.
Well, there was the World Championship for show jumping on. Did you realise that?
No, I did not watch that. Max has now left. Sorry. Max has walked out.
Don's got two topics.
Don, yes.
I'm speaking to Craig before I announce him. But Don's got two topics predominantly. One is horse riding, the other is Hawthorn Football Club. If you can't speak voluminously about Hawthorn or show jumping, you're not even through to the semis without dropping a set. A term which you'll understand, Craig.
My goodness.
Well, Miss Byrne is a showy.
Well, I'm wearing my riding boots today.
She's a showy. So we've got something in common.
Phoebe.
Yes.
If you've got anything else.
Well, I would like to talk to you about Ben Cousins.
Yes, go ahead and then you can talk to Craig.
Like to talk about Ben Cousins?
Oh, hang on. We'll listen to her.
No, Sam, please tell us what you're doing with Ben Cousins.
You told me. I'm speaking I'm speaking at a function
at Colac.
Listen, Don, let me finish.
Can I just let you into something, Craig and Donna? I say three words and then Don, I say, I'll tell you where I've been. He says, where have you been? I said, well, I'm about to tell you where I've been, Don. So I'm speaking at a function. Whereabouts? I'm about to tell you, Don. I'm speaking in a couple of weeks at a function. Colloquially known as a sports night. It's a lunch, actually, at Yarraville. And Phoebe rings me up and she says, oh, I see you're speaking with Ben Cousins at the function. I said, that's news to me, Phoebe. So that's where this is headed. So she wants to speak to me about me speaking with Ben Cousins. So go ahead.
And that is correct. I did call you on... Yes. Saturday. So it sounds very interesting. This is a grand final week lunch that you're doing at the Yarraville Club.
Yes.
Speaking with Ben Cousins, I hear that his dad is coming across from WA with him. And tell me, you actually do have a friendship with his father that stretches back decades.
Yes, I played in the same football team as him back in the 70s.
60s?
70s.
50s?
Brian Cousins, Bryan.
Thank you.
I think his name is?
Yes.
Isn't it? So I know Brian well. And I don't know Ben. I've met Ben once or twice, but I don't know Ben very well at all. But I'll be looking forward to seeing what he's got to say about his life.
Well, Ben's doing four speaking engagements in Melbourne in grand final week.
Wow.
I think it's terrific, actually, that he's got his life back together and he's able to do these speaking engagements. I hear he's done about half a dozen in Perth as well over the last few months. So, Sam, I can tell you will sell that event out.
I won't. Brian will. Ben will.
And it'll be a great event to
I'll be at. I'll just be a sideshow, which is what I always am.
You're big.
Yeah, big, Don. So Phoebe, you can be part of this. So... I have tried to get this man on the podcast for a long time because I've known him for many years. And he has affectionately, because what we do, Don, is we look up on the Wikipedia just things about who we're trying to interview. And I look up Craig Willis and it says Australian actor. Under Australian actor, it says Craig Willis. And I thought this must be another Craig Willis. No, it's his photo. So I didn't know he was an actor, but we'll ask him about that. He's known as the voice of the AFL. You would know that, Don. The voice of the AFL.
He's also the voice of Channel 7.
Oh, my God. I'm introducing him, Don. I've got all that written down. You introduce him.
I work with Craig, but I found Craig to be a mystery man as to where he came from, and I'd like to delve a little further because he's got this beautiful voice that there's only three.
You told me it was...
Shut up, will you? I'm doing the introduction. Three people that possess the voice that Craig has got. Both of these fellows, Craig, you might be interested because you're a rural man, commentate at the agricultural shows in Brisbane and travel.
The Ecker.
Yeah. And then they travel north and their delivery is just so good. I've forgotten their names, but you come into that
category. Graham was one of them. I did the Royal Melbourne show for some years.
Don.
I did the
just
show.
Shut up, John.
Oh, no, Don, no, no, please, well. Just a minute. Now, Don, in order to give someone their due deference, I was going to mention all that, who he is, and then we ask him about his vocation and how he got to it without you jumping in and saying, mate, mellifluous. You gave me that word. His voice is mellifluous.
Beauty, isn't it?
Oh. Didn't you? You said...
Please, what it...
His voice is mellifluous, and then you said, what does it
unique.
Mean, as a matter of fact?
Unique.
No, it doesn't mean...
In today's age, it is unique.
Anyhow, Craig Willis is known as the voice of the AFL. He's been in the emceeing business for 40-odd years. He has been the voice of Channel 7 football. He's been on Channel 10. I don't know what about Channel 9. Maybe they couldn't. Maybe he just...
We're coming up.
He's been the voice of 3AW. He's been... Grand Finals, Anzac Days, Melbourne Cups, the Sydney Olympics, Athens Olympics, tennis. He's the voice of the Bank of Melbourne. He does ads for. He's been to the Beijing Olympics, and he got a gig from doing this overseas work. I've got a feeling we'll ask him. They wanted an Australian accent that everyone could understand, so they went to Craig. So that's a ham-fisted introduction, a lot better than Don's. So Craig Willis, broadcaster and announcer extraordinaire, welcome to You Cannot Be Serious.
John, thank you. Don, thank you. And Fiona, a very good to you as well.
Good morning, Craig.
Well, I don't know when this podcast actually is streamed around the universe.
In an hour.
Oh, okay. Well, good morning. Thank you for the introduction. Nothing like a good introduction.
It goes around the world.
No, it's a very good... Don, you interrupted the introduction. Go ahead.
John, you and I used to fill in on breakfast on 3AW.
We did.
That's when I used to run the show.
Yes.
Now, I know Don's proclivity for Hawthorne Football Club and show jumping. You mentioned my rural illity. Yeah. Is that a word? There were two places...
Don wouldn't know if it is or not.
Two places one place I went through the other day, and the other place I go through all the time.
Okay.
Yay.
Oh, do you?
Birthplace of?
Well, the foxes come from yay and yah.
Get them.
No.
Get them.
Oh, it was a joke.
Place? McCarthy's come
I'm
from.
I'm not talking football here.
Gay Poss.
I'm talking your other.
Yay.
Yes.
Jim Slaven?
No.
Prince Jandika?
I'm talking your other love.
How do you know all these racehorses?
Himself, Australia's most famous, well-known equestrians.
Oh, Bill Roycroft
was born in Yeo.
He didn't come from Yeo. He came from Flowerdale.
Well, that's between Yeo and
Flowerdale. Anyway, Whittlesey. Road to school. Yes.
Yeah, and then the other day we went back to my old rugby club in Wagga Wagga.
Did you come from New South?
I came from New South originally, from Wagga Wagga. Fiona, you can write this down if you like.
Yes.
And we went through Cole Cairn. On the way to Wagga Wagga, from Albury to Wagga, you go through
Colquhoun. Where it is. So I've been through there.
Another equestrian. I'm getting the equestrian stuff out of the way, John.
Craig.
What's the name? Hoy. What's
well
name?
Done. Andrew Hoy.
Andrew Hoy.
So you go.
Yeah, ahoy
and
there.
Graham, whatever his name was, used to do the Royal Melbourne show, and I used to...
That was Graham Barker.
That's right.
But there's... anyway, you've got a unique voice, and
it's very kind of you.
Yeah, and so... And you started to answer my question because you started what, in country radio?
Yeah, 2LT Lithgow, west of Sydney, if you ever gave the earth an enema.
And did you go to what they call radio schools? Used to be big in Melbourne, somebody's radio school, and then the graduates went from there.
Let me tell you. I was guest speaker at the, what was it called? The Wollundry Club in Wagga on Sunday. And somebody said, they always say, where did you begin? So I was a dispatch boy at an advertising agency in Sydney. 1973.
That is a dispatch boy.
The office boy.
Yeah.
But I worked with a guy called Les Gock, who was the lead singer of Hush.
Well done.
And Hans Torv, who at the time was Anna's brother. He was Rupert Murdoch's brother-in-law. So we started on the same day. And I went to 2UW as the office boy, and John Laws was on air there. But there was a chap in Sydney who gave voice lessons. And he lived at Roseville. And I rang him up and I said, "Excuse me, Mr. Smith, I'd like to get to radio." He said, "I can tell by your voice over the phone, dear boy, you have no future in that particular profession." And I've always wanted to find out whatever happened to him, because I would have loved to have rung him up and told him to get stuffed. Other than that, yes.
So you started, what, at 2UE?
No. First station
Lithgow
was...
Lithgow he started.
Lithgow.
LT.
2LT.
Yeah, aren't you listening? That's the trouble is you ask questions, you never listen to the answer.
Fiona, when you do that list of the grumpiest old footballer type thing, who's going to be number one?
Well,
don't worry about power couples.
I'm thinking you may be sitting next to him.
Do you reckon Don and I could be a power couple? Don, LT, Lithgow, don't ask him any other questions you already answered, will you?
And which famous athlete came from Lithgow?
The Flash, Marjorie Jackson.
Correct. Well done.
What else do you want to know?
No, what we want to know is something from Craig, not from you.
I'm loving every minute
Have you
this.
Still got your penchant for the agricultural? Oh. Because you grew up in Wagga and what?
No, I grew up in Sydney and worked on radio in Wagga, and I now live in Mansfield.
Yeah, that's right.
With Donna. And we have Lockie the Bull.
On how many acres?
40. We're surrounded by horse people, but I won't go into that because that's equestrian. And we've got Daisy, who's another bull, named after the people who owned him was called Day. But he's a boy, but we call him, well, Donna calls him Daisy. And then we have a Hereford, a black baldy, sorry to use that expression in the modern era, but that's what they're called, a cow named Eddie, E-D-D-I-E, and its calf is known as Pendles.
Oh.
Pendlebury, yes.
Yes,
oh,
do you like that?
Yeah.
Don went out with a woman from the country and all the horse manure. Didn't
yeah,
they?
Good
God, now, Craig,
yes,
this
John.
Is exciting stuff, mate.
It's, I know it's riveting, isn't it? I'm just getting the rural side out of
it. Yeah. So Don's done now with questions. If it's not Hawthorne or rural shit, he's finished.
Right, now you read Fiona's question that she's got.
No, she just wrote down the famous racehorses that I don't know why she wrote that down, but that's not little to do with what I was going to ask you, but we might get on to that. So, Craig.
John.
You have a mellifluous voice.
That's very kind.
Has this been perfected? Did you go to training school? Don asked a similar thing.
No, I was just lucky.
And so how did you get your first gig 40 years ago? How did the AFL or Channel 7 get hold of you? Did you put in a tape or what? How did you start?
I was working at 3AW with Darren Hinch. Do you remember him?
Yes,
well, he's still about.
Yes.
I think he's just 78 now, Darren.
Mm.
So
he's into his second liver?
Yes. I started with him in the January, and he had his 40th birthday in the February, so that's 38 years ago.
Okay.
He went to Channel 7. Remember?
Yep.
Hinch?
Hinch, yep.
And then they got me down in the newsroom to start training some of their younger journalists in the art of reading.
I see.
And that led to doing some voiceover work. And then one of the best blokes you'd ever meet, Gordon Bennett, said to me, come and do some work for us. And that lasted for 18 years.
And then the AFL it was then still, wasn't it?
I was at the tennis one year and Ian Collins was taking over as the general manager of football operations.
Yep.
And he rang and said, I'd like to talk to you when the tennis is finished. So that was 1993.
And he said, we'd like you to be the voice, the spokesman.
And the compere.
The compere.
Yep.
And was it remuneration? Was it did they offer a good package of remuneration or was it just a love job they thought you might appreciate?
It's something you'd have to discuss with my accountant who'll be released because of good behaviour in about 5 months. But with the aid of the bank in Liechtenstein and Monaco, no, it was reasonably good money.
That's all right.
Yeah. And
did you replace Michael Williams?
I did, yes.
So Michael went up to 93 himself, did he? Or was there a...
It was about the year... It was the year after Maruchi Barumba sang the national anthem at the grand final. Remember Maruti Barumba, who had a terrible misfortune with sound at the grand final?
Oh, no.
Yes, it was very...
What misfortune?
Well, her earplugs things and everything just went belly up for her.
So that was one of all the things that you've been involved in...
No, I started the year after.
No, but of all the things that you've been involved in, just as an adjunct to that comment, what is the most awkward moment, not that you've been involved with necessarily or that you've felt for the people you've been introducing at either the Olympics, the tennis, the golf? You've done everything, mate. You're ubiquitous, I think is the word.
All right. Well, a very quick story was the Davis Cup final here, Australia versus Spain. Rod Laver Arena, and they brought a grass court in using big cranes from Strathair. And we lined the teams up for the national anthem, and James Morrison was to play the Spanish national anthem. And I stood there and said, "Ladies and gentlemen, please be upstanding for the Spanish national anthem to be performed by James Morrison." So there's the Spanish team, the Australian team, and it's packed. There's thousands of Spaniards there. They've come for the Davis Cup. This is huge. International television, right? So James Morrison starts playing the trumpet. And I'm standing there thinking,
just do that again?
Do I have to?
No. Go.
He's putting shit on you.
Thank you, Don.
I never swear with a microphone on, Don.
Never ever. Fucking ever swear with a microphone on.
I'm standing there thinking, this is pretty groovy. What a national anthem. Wow. And the Spanish team all of a sudden unembraced and started standing around going, what's going on? And their team doctor came over and grabbed me on the arm, and I didn't know what was wrong. I had no idea. Had I said something inappropriate? No. So then we had, I can't think of the lady's name, she's a well-known Melbourne singer. We've got a beautiful voice. It'll come to me one day. And she's singing
this. Rhonda Birchmore?
No, it wasn't Rhonda.
Marina Pryor.
No, it wasn't Marina Pryor.
Anyhow, it'll come to you.
It'll come to me. Mm.
Who?
Melbourne? Not Jessica. Melbourne. No, but somebody who...
Serious Melbourne.
I'll think of it.
40 years on.
Anyway, she starts singing a beautiful rendition of the Australian National Anthem, and the Spanish bloke still got me by the arm, and he goes, "Wrong anthem." And I said, "No, that's ours." Then I've realised James Morrison has played the Franco era national anthem, not the royalist one. So the Spanish crowd are going ape droppings behind me. The Spanish team, Jordi Arrese was their captain. He was a very good player in his day. And it was his brother who was the team doctor, and he'd alerted me to it. So you can imagine, I went, in my mind, and verbally I went, "Oh shit, what do you do?" So the Spanish team were being directed by their sports minister, who was in the front row, and he's pointing at them saying, "Don't leave the court until you hear our anthem." So John Fitzgerald, is a lovely man.
Yes.
He came over and said, "What's wrong?" I said, "We've played the wrong anthem." Now, James Morrison at this stage is in a car on the way back to Essendon Airport to fly his twin-engine plane back to Sydney. So
he's been given the wrong information, or did he not
research it? He's a great musical talent, James. And when they offered to send him the music for it, he said, "No, I'll just..." He said, "I can listen to it and then I can play it."
I see. Yeah. Yep.
He didn't. So we're standing around. So Fitzy came over and he said... Well, I say something. I said, "Well, look, it would help." So he apologised to the Spanish team and to the supporters that inadvertently we'd played the wrong anthem, or James Morrison, whatever. And then somebody plucked it out from the back of their chair or somewhere. And but it went on for a good 20 minutes. And you can imagine, after finally we had the right anthem, there was downstairs, there was the Department of Foreign Affairs, the Prime Minister's Department, all involved. And the poor girl who'd organised the whole thing, who did a wonderful job, was beside herself. And I said, "But you check this." And she said, "I sent this..." There's a CD called Anthems of the World.
Yep.
"I sent that down to the Spanish consulate in St Kilda Road, and they sent it back saying, yes, that's it."
They ticked off on it, did they?
Yeah, and then that means they didn't listen to it. Because there were two versions.
Yep. So wow.
Wow.
So you would have to do research. would you have to be... You'd have to do research on what you're about to say, because you're doing this live. All the events you do are live, not taped. Yeah. And you'd have to go over what you're going to say in case you made a faux pas, like our friend Sandy Roberts, who said Leanne Cock instead of Leanne Dick or whatever.
Who married a bloke called Cockerel, would you believe? Mount Gambier races.
So have you ever had any awkward moments yourself where you've...
No.
I'm not sure that I've done that correctly.
Fiona will tell you, and she does a wonderful job as a journalist because she prepares. And that's the secret. Obviously, Fiona, it's not something we're seeing here today, is it? Preparation.
The only preparation Don has is Preparation H. Through his hemorrhoids.
But Craig, you're right. Preparation is the key, isn't it?
The only time that I've found myself caught short, I've got two good Federer stories for you, was Davis Cup here against Switzerland. And some players specialise in doubles in Davis Cup. For instance, the Woodies, representing Australia.
And McEnroe.
And McNamee. But Federer had also played doubles for Switzerland, and singles, of course. Federer has a gold medal in tennis, but in doubles. He partnered Stan Wawrinka in Beijing. So I would have a card for the singles players who play singles, but sometimes there's a substitution. So I would also have their doubles record. Anyway, Federer's playing singles in Davis Cup, but in my pocket I had his doubles rundown. So I figured he's probably played singles and doubles at most ties. Wrong. So I've said, representing Switzerland, please welcome Roger. So he's come out and I've gone, you know, he's played ties against Slovakia, France, Germany, etc., etc. And today, proudly representing Switzerland, please welcome Roger Federer. And he's looking at me, he's laughing, and he's doing the warm-up and everything else. And when he came off, this is how good he is, he came off and waited up the corridor and he said, "That was my doubles record, wasn't it?" I said, "Yes." I see. He said, "Because you missed out Czech Republic, Uruguay." So I learnt that lesson, and it didn't bother him. Do you want the other really good Federer story?
We want all your good stories, Craig.
You ready for this one, Don?
Go for it.
Fiona, are you ready for this? When he first came out here, he was only a young man. He's a freak. Mm-hmm. You know, most of these players, and you know this, at the top level, football, tennis, golf, whatever sport, are all a bit ADT, DDT. Yep. They're a bit strange. He's not. He's just a bloke. And he came up with this idea of putting a word into his introduction that meant absolutely bugger all. Now, airline pilots do it, where they have to get a word in that sounds really technical but means nothing. So the first year
it's
we did
sort of a
this,
challenge, is it?
It's a challenge. Yep. The first year he did, he'd give me the word and said, "Right, you get this in."
Oh, I see.
So he'd give me a word, and was the first time we did it was Limmerier, which is High German or Swiss for great. It's, yeah, you know, the kids would go cool. What's the word on it? Elite,
sick,
mint. Yeah, sick.
Sick.
Awesome.
Yeah. It's
awesome.
The shit.
So during his introduction, which at that stage was only one card, we would go blah 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 blah. Also in 2008, he won the Limmerier Open, which doesn't exist, of course. So he starts laughing. Tony Godsick, his manager, starts laughing, and we all thought it was very funny. So each year, there was a different word that I had to get into the introduction. Nobody at Tennis Australia had any idea we were doing this. One or two of the umpires who were... They have a chair umpire, but there's always a backup sitting over in the corner.
Yeah, they're privy to it.
Or, well, no, they come up later and go, "Where's that Limmerier Open point?" Anyway, the last time I was with him, we did a function at Crown for one of his sponsors, and all the money he gets from, this was Credit Suisse, all that money he gets paid to do that goes to his charity, his foundation. And we were chatting out the back. He said, "I've got the word for you." He said, "You know, I got here the other day." He said, "It's Wonthaggi." You know, the town of Victoria. Yeah. I said, "How the hell do you know about Wonthaggi?" He said, "The bloke doing my massage comes from there." And he's really proud of it. So I thought, oh, great. He said, "Good luck." So it was the second night. He's gone out to three cards of achievements by this stage. So we got in there. And in 2016, he won there, he won here, he won Thaggy. So he started, it was the first time we'd done that.
Yeah.
He started laughing. and couldn't stop. Johnny Blom was the chair umpire, and he looked at me and called me over.
He started laughing while he's warming up.
He couldn't stop. Because he laughs like a girl. Yeah. He goes, so John Blom said,
or a person.
Is Roger all right? And I said, I'll tell you later. So,
fantastic.
That was just a little
story. That's fantastic. So you obviously got on, this was one of my lead-on questions. You got on very well with Roger Federer.
Yes.
Did you get on well with all of them, or did you not get on with them, or some of them were aloof? Were the women harder than the men?
You've got to remember that this is the top level of their sport. So it's like you getting ready, as you've done, and you've done getting ready for a final or a grand final, because they're the ones that are going to stick. So they're different at a Grand Slam event. So I did a tournament thing, which was a bit like the IPL, but in tennis. So it was in Manila, Singapore, New Delhi, and finished in, where was it? Not Bahrain, no, the other joint, Dubai. Yes, Eddie, I won't go on about Dubai. Wonderful place. So we had Andy Murray, Maria Sharapova, Pete Sampras, Andre Agassi, Serena Williams. Totally different. Lots of fun, interacting with the crowd. Totally different. You get them to a Grand Slam, they don't say shit.
Yep.
But you see them downstairs, and Djokovic does a good impersonation of me, for instance. But Serena, who some people have described as a cow with a tennis racket, is in fact a very funny, warm person. But when she's on the on the job, if you pardon the expression,
she's on song.
She's on song. So they're in that sort of
zone.
That's the word. Thank you, Don.
So what is your proudest moment? So you did the Beijing Olympics.
Rio.
No, I know that, Craig, but I'm
just... You left it out of the intro, but I'm not going to pick you up on that.
If I'd read out your intro, we'd be still here on Wikipedia.
Hang on, Johnny. Were those done live over at the Olympics, or did you do them back here at
The Voice? It's all done live. Right. You're sitting there all day, all night, with another announcer. Do you want a quick Olympics?
I'll
give you a quick Olympics.
I was in the middle of asking you a question until my very considerate co-host came on and had took no fucking notice of what I was about to ask.
I wasn't interested.
You're not interested, Don, in anything. The listener might have been interested in the question. Craig can say no, they wouldn't be interested in this, but give us a chance to answer him.
I like the way you said listener.
Yeah, that's right. Well, we have 60,000 of them. The Beijing Olympics, because the CCP, the Chinese Communist Party, run it, they would have been very, very preoccupied with what you were going to say and how you were going to say it or not.
Not.
No.
Well, it's because it's the IOC and each World Tennis Federation, the swimming people, the soccer people, they run the competition.
Yeah.
But I'll give you two quick Olympic stories. In Beijing, we did a rehearsal. Now, I'm dealing with an Australian girl that I knew very well, who I trusted, but a lot of Chinese kids.
And her name?
Debbie. Chinese kids.
Debbie who?
She went to Tennis Australia with me.
Oh, sorry, yeah.
And was in Beijing. So she's the producer. There's a whole lot of Chinese kids, some who spoke English, some who spoke French, Chinese and English. So we had the pick of the crop of the kids. It's very sad because of the one-child policy. They don't have brothers or sisters. So when they work together, they become very close. So the girls hold hands, the boys hold hands. It's the way they are. So I had a Chinese guy as my backup in case I got COVID or something. I think it started there.
Yeah, that's right. So they hadn't launched it on the world by then.
And he was wonderful. His father was the Chancellor of Beijing University. So Charles, his name. He was quite a tall bloke for a Chinese, but lovely fellow. So I insisted he do a medal presentation. Now, in the Olympics, every medal presentation has to be shown. They might show 8 seconds of the equestrian show jumping, but they must show the medal presentation. That's part of the contract for all the broadcasters. And that's the big moment.
Yep.
So I'd always said, I want Charles to do a medal presentation. So in the tennis, men's singles, women's singles, men's doubles, women's doubles. So there's four of them. So I wanted him to do one. This bloke comes from some obscure Beijing organising committee thing, and we're doing rehearsals. So they do the whole schmozzle. The girls with the medals, the olive branches, the things. And they were very clever. They had the flagpoles with air blowing up so that the flags moved and all this.
Mm.
And these guys, we did about four rehearsals, me doing it. Then I wanted Charles to do it, which he did. We had the French girl and the Chinese announcer. So this little funny little man came up to where we were sitting and started berating them in Chinese. Now, Charles was helping me with translation and Deb was over there in the corner. And this bloke saying, "Oh, this is the worst ever I see. You people got no idea. Very, very..." And Deb's in tears by this stage. So I stood up. Imagine, I stood up and I said, "Hey, come here. Why don't you cough and we'll work on it, right? But don't you come up and speak to us like that because we're a team, right?" Everyone's in tears. The boys are in tears. Deb, and I said, "I've had enough. I nearly went home. I've had enough." So this bloke buggered off. And I said to them, "Right, you guys did a great job. And I'm the only one who's ever done this before. You guys were fantastic. Let's have the rest of the day off." Deb said, "Yep." I said, "Come on, we'll go back to our hotel." So we went back, had a couple of drinks. We were fine. So I have to go into work the next day, of course, and the International Tennis Federation, running the competition, have an office. So I walk in. I said to Paul, "What's his name?" "There was a bit of a stink yesterday." He said, "I heard." I said, "I may have overstepped the mark slightly." He said, "No, you didn't." He said, "No." He said, "They are just terrible to deal with." I walked out the door and there's this Chinese man with his entourage. And I thought...
Oh, wow.
And Charles was with me and I thought, "Oh, I'll do the right thing here. Détente. Entente cordial."
Yep.
I put my hand out. He put his hand out. Charles, I said, "Would you apologise to Mr. Ying? I was a little overwrought, just a bit rude." And Mr. Ying's apologising to me because he didn't realise I'd done this before. He never had been to an Olympics. Next thing, we've become the best friends. He's then taken me to the archery and the hockey to help evaluate the medal presentations at those two sports. And we became, it's funny, we just became friends. And when I left the hotel to fly back with Graham Rowland from Channel 7. He was at the hotel foyer and he gave me the most beautiful mask that the Chinese do with a box, my friend. Mm. And he's hugging me. And I thought, that was one of the most special moments for me. I've told him to get... And next thing, we're pals. So
well, I'm really sorry I asked you about any interesting things happened in Beijing before Don just jumped in
I'm confused. Who were you working for, Seven or...?
No, working for the sports presentation department.
Of what?
The International Olympic Committee. So what happens is... if you were doing the show jumping, right, if you were a show jumping commentator, the show jumping federation, the International...
The FBI,
The FBI, how appropriate, they would recommend you to the sports presentation department because you know the sport.
Mm-hmm.
And you would bring your expertise to do the commentary for the crowd. Not for television, just for the crowd. So that's how it works.
Okay, so you're an internet. So that was international. I'm really confused.
About what, Don?
It's basically for the crowd, Don.
For the crowd.
Yeah, but you hear it in the background. People would say, "Oh, you were in Beijing."
So they'd have, what, a French commentator, English?
You're just doing the announcements, yeah.
Mm.
So that's a real compliment to you that you're representing the English-speaking part of the world.
Yes. Well, the one in Sydney, which I'll tell you, was the 2000, my first one I ever did. There was a girl from SBS. I don't know her name. She had no idea. And we had a French announcer who made me look tiny. She was a large lady. And she loved a cigarette. Well, I did in those days too, but she loved a cigarette more than I did. And she smoked Gaulois.
Yeah, Galway. Yeah.
No, Galway's in Ireland.
Oh, yeah, Galway. I remember Galway.
So don't worry about listing people who know geography for you. I only can leave that one out. So I am sitting there and this...
Galloway.
That'll do. Yes, there's Galloway's. That's not the Garraway.
Yeah.
Or the...
No, Galloway.
Gary Owen. So there was a break between matches. She said, "I think I'll go for a cigarette." Now, this is... We're miles up in the stand. And she was big girl. So she goes down and then out. Next thing, we hear on the two-way, players coming, and this SBS girl said, "Oh, shit, there's no French announcer." And they'd shut the doors. So she's outside going, "Oh." So I went, "Don't worry. Madame et Monsieur, Bienvenue, la grande salle de bal et le juge de ligne.
Really?
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome the technical officials and ball persons. So they walk out.
Wow.
Then cue players. Mesdames et messieurs, les athlètes. Ladies and gentlemen, the athletes, as they're called in the Olympics, not players. So the two, and then the warm-up starts. They open the doors. Well, the French lady's up the stairs. She gets there. She gets to the top. She goes, ah, merde, merde.
Yeah,
anyway, she said, you were magnifique. And the SBS girl said, didn't tell me you spoke French. I said, well, actually, it's written down here, and I've been sitting here for 5 days listening to it once, twice, four, six times a day for each match.
And so,
anyway, I did do French at school.
So, Don, it must have been your proudest moment to represent what you do at Sydney in 2000.
Yeah, well, it's been five Olympics, which is terrific.
What?
Five?
No, Craig.
John.
Our Olympics in 2000.
Oh, in 2000, yes.
I said that.
Great.
That
honor.
Must have been your...
It was one of the pinnacles, apart from doing breakfast on 3AW with you.
So that must have been your proudest moment, I would suggest, or
yes,
not.
Yes, yes, no, very chuffed I was. That's a great word, isn't it?
To be the...
That's CHUFFED.
Spokesperson at your National Olympics.
Correct.
When Kathy did that and everyone else... Great opening ceremony and all that.
The opening's down. That's the story. The opening ceremony. I ran into an old mate of mine, Johnny Dawson. His father had the pub, Sir Henry Barclay in Heidelberg. Mad Fitzroy man. And we're sitting in the crowd. We're watching.
You're Fitzroy too, aren't you?
Yes. Watching the great opening ceremony. I didn't get the voiceover job. John Stanton got that. But that's all right. And, of course, then begins the parade of nations involved in the Olympics. And Australia, being the host nation, comes out last. So Dawson said, come on, we're going to have a couple of drinks. So we go down the back. He said, had an English girlfriend with him at the time. We'll have a gin and tonic. When I heard Zanzibar, I thought, geez, we better go back to the seat because Australia's becoming... Oh, my God. I vaguely remember the Australians coming into the stadium. And that was about it.
And that's the beautiful line of Norman May when Ceylon had just... changed their name to Sri Lanka.
That's right.
And as they wandered in, he's got on the sheet that Ceylon are meant to be there in alphabetical order, and they didn't turn up, and eventually Sri Lanka turned up, and he said, and what did he say? He said...
Jill story.
No, but he didn't realise that... didn't realise Ceylon had changed their name to Sri Lanka, and he said, and here comes Ceylon... No, there's been a mistake. It's Sri Lanka. But he didn't do his research.
Similar. The Commonwealth Games here, I did the voiceover live for the opening ceremony, and I kept telling the clowns who were producing it, mostly British people, that number four, because they do everything by numbers, Don, so they'll go cue number three, and you go to the third part of the script and you read whatever's there. Number 42 was a nation that was making its way into the Melbourne Cricket Ground. Oh, there were two things. They had the baton, the Queen's baton, going up the Yarra, and it got out of order. And they had it written down who was supposed to hand it to whom. But I'm looking, and I had to lean back to look at the TV above me. So I had to ad-lib the fact that it was, I think, I can't remember, but it got out of order. But then Ronald Dale Barassi took hold of the baton, and he handed it to Herb Elliott on the bridge. So I was able to do that bit live, and they're going, where's that on the script? Oh, don't worry, I luckily knew who it was, and plus it was dark. But anyway, we get to the Parade of Nations, and I kept saying, number 42 on my script is blank. It's all right, we'll be fixing that, it'll be fine. So we get to the night. Number 42 is on top of the page, so I've got to number 41. Turn it over, 42 is blank. Binoculars. South Africa. I only recognised... Well, I knew it was then, but only because of the South African flag.
Yep.
So they were very lucky that I actually knew what the flag of
South Africa
looked
was,
like. But I told them five times during the rehearsal, number 42 is still blank on my rundown. We'll fix
it. Be right on the day.
Yeah, good on you.
So, Craig...
yes, John.
You've done grand finals.
Yes.
Anzac Day.
That's what I'm talking about.
Do you still do the grand final?
I'm semi-retired from that.
Melbourne Cup.
So who's the voice now of the AFL?
I think Hamish does that sort of stuff, doesn't he? The presentation. Hamish McLaughlin.
Melbourne Cups you've done.
Yes.
You've Cox done coming golf. Up.
Yes.
You've done Rugby Union World yes. Cups.
Oh, now, do you want that one?
I want something with any of those sports I've mentioned.
Donna's getting a bit excited here because she loves Hugh Jackman. Right. And who doesn't?
Who doesn't, yeah.
Hugh Jackman sang the national anthem prior to a Bledisloe Cup match at the MCG, as Dame Kiritakanua did that night. So all I was worried about was getting Dame Kiritakanua's name out properly. So, ladies and gentlemen, please be upstanding for the national anthem of New Zealand to be performed by Dame Kiritakanua. I love the New Zealand anthem. God bless New Zealand. It's great.
Yep.
She's beautiful. Please now remain upstanding for the Australian national anthem to be performed by Hugh Jackman. So, and now the Wallabies are out there. The All Blacks are there. You can feel it. I'm ready to go. I'm ready to go.
Haneke, what's it called?
So we're walking off the ground. The haka. And I said to Hugh Jackman, well, mate, it's one thing I'll be able to tell my grandkids. Now, Hugh Jackman was a star, but nothing as he is today.
Yep.
He is a megastar. I said, I can tell my grandkids, if I ever have any, which I don't, I sang a duet with Hugh Jackman. He put his arm around me. He said, Craig, I thought somebody was strangling a cat behind me.
Oh, he's the best.
he's a lovely bloke.
So
apparently, well, Donna thinks he is.
So yeah. Personalities of any sport that you got to know well, or people that gave you the thripney bits?
No, look, not I think really. At that level, as you'd both know, and you would know too, Fiona, that the higher up the tree they are, the nicer they can be to deal with.
Mm.
It's the would-bes if they could be. So there's a certain tennis player that I still kind of, who's got more talent in his little finger than most of them.
Not Nick.
I didn't mention his
name. No, but Nick, I love Nick Kyrgios, but as you're speaking about him.
Yeah, yep. He came to me, we were doing that IPL type tennis thing, and he came and he said, I want you to introduce me as the wonder from down under, or something similar. Yep. And I said, well, you'll get that when you deserve it.
Well done.
Yeah, and he hardly spoke to me for the next 3 days.
That's all right. That's good.
But you have to learn in the caper that I'm in that there are times when you approach and there are times when you don't.
Yes, times when you what?
You don't approach them. You just let them sit. And I've seen that in most of these very elite athletes. And I'll give you a good example. Was the Drawn Grand Final. And 70? It was
no.
77? You two are going.
Collingwood.
Collingwood St Kilda.
Oh, yes, sorry. Yep. And well, I remember a Drawn Grand Final, Collingwood. Yeah.
Collingwood, well, North Melbourne.
So it was a very sad
that's
day.
That's why I said not
a very sad
be
day
there.
Because somebody we all know was not very well on that day, and that was Jill Lindsay. And Jill was a great friend, a very close and dear friend.
Mm-hmm.
And she was there down on the ground at the start of the game, but she had, as you know, some serious health issues at that time, and she was not feeling well, and she went home. So I'm sitting down on the boundary with Tony Abate from the AFL, and Tony's got the list of the players who are going to receive their premiership medallions, and he's crossed out the backups and everything else, so it's all ready to go. So it's one side, the other side. So once the siren goes, pull out St Kilda, keep Collingwood, or pull Collingwood out, keep St Kilda. With about 3 minutes to go, now we can see the real-time clock here. I've given it back to Tony. I said, it's going to be a draw, this. He said, nah, bullshit. Draw. So I go out on the ground, and the first person, of course, I'm looking for is Jill.
Yeah.
I had no idea what to do. So Dimitriou and Mike Fitzpatrick are walking around with their hands in their pockets counting the shillingi because they're going to have a grand final replay. And I didn't know whether they were going to have a night grand final, twilight, what to do. But we had to present the Norm Smith medal to the best on ground.
For that game.
For that game. Lenny Hayes won it, couldn't speak, he copped a whack across the throat, didn't want it anyway, you can imagine, but it was like watching people being dragged from a burning building. These blokes were stuffed, they're lying on the ground and they're knackered. So I kept asking, what do I do here? And I said, made a decision, we've got to hear from both captains. Luckily, Nick Maxwell was captain of Collingwood and Nick Riewoldt was captain of St Kilda. So we had two sensible blokes.
Yep.
So I went over Now, Channel 7 have gone to, are doing interviews, have gone to a commercial break. Merv Ford, who you'd know well, you'd know Merv, has come over. He said, what are we doing? I said, well, I'm going to get both captains up, but I've got to do the Norm Smith medal. He said, no, that's what I would suggest we have to do. So we've got, I can't remember, might have been Peter Matera, I think. I can't remember who was presenting it. So we had to get Lenny over towards the microphone, and another terrific girl. I grew up in the same suburb in Sydney that I did, Lenny, at Eastwood. Anyway, I said, he doesn't know he's won it, but I had to say, get him over this way. So Norm Smith medal, he puts it round, goes, thank you very much, couldn't speak. I then said, please welcome the captain of Collingwood, Nick Maxwell. Nick said, oh, God, you know, they didn't say much. Nick Revolt, that's it, folks. See you next week. And that was all we could do.
Fantastic.
Thank you for the direction from the senior management of the Australian Football League.
Now, maybe the penultimate question from me, Don, unless because you've been asking many questions.
Don, that means the second last question.
For the last
question.
Half hour.
Fiona, that's the second last question, the penultimate.
So I presume you didn't ever work for Nine because there was a bit of a rivalry, of course, between Seven and Nine, and you were the designated spokesman for AFL when Seven had the rights.
Yes.
And I suppose you never...
But you worked for Seven. You worked for Seven.
Well, I worked for the AFL.
Fuck.
So...
Because they're the listening intently.
Because they are the broadcasting network, Seven, of course he would have a relationship with them.
Yes.
And I was going to ask, when Nine got the rights, did the AFL want you to be their announcer Nine as well?
It worked well because I was contracted to the AFL.
Yes.
And they made the call.
Yes.
And when Channel 7 chose not to bid
for
the rights, Kerry Stokes ensured that I was kept on staff.
He stopped you. He stopped Nine from poaching you, sort of.
Basically, well, but basically. I don't think there was going to ever be an approach from Nine anyway.
Right. No, that's all right.
But that meant we did Rex's show and all that sort of carry on that we did over
that's
the
right,
years.
Rex's show.
When Channel 7 got the rights back, they didn't renew my contract. But then I ended up doing more work for them than I did when I was contracted. So
it hasn't been all great. It's just this is it, we've both suffered a bit of a personal tragedy in life, and it all hasn't been beer and skittles, just to say. But you take the good with the bad. You've had you lost your wife, who I knew, Monica, and you've got a lovely partner, Donna, here now.
Yep.
Looking back at the way it all up, it's been a fantastic lifestyle you've had.
Yes.
And,
but you know, and we've been close friends for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
One of the most disturbing phone calls I had to make was the day I told you. You didn't know that Bonnie had gone.
No, I rang up and I said, because I lost a man, and I said to Craig, how's Monica? And he said, oh, talk about embarrassing. And he said, she's, I can't even remember what you said. And I said,
she's gone.
I said, oh, my God. I said, how wouldn't I have known that? Yeah. That is possibly the most embarrassing thing.
No, but it happens. We talked, and as you know, I, along with Donna, were thinking of you on, we rang you first anniversary of you losing your beautiful girl. Yep. So. I mean, that's the personal side. It's very personal, but you get on with things.
You do.
And it's not easy. It's bloody hard. And I've been very lucky now that I have beautiful Donna.
Donna.
14 months. 14 months. What is it? 14. Yeah, it's a long. It's been a long
2 days,
while.
4 hours, 19 minutes.
She's
but who's
very
counting?
Good at all that.
Yeah.
Very good at all that.
So, but Craig Willis, the voice of the AFL, Don and Phoebe. He is a star, he has been for 40-odd years, and he still is. And we could go on, because we don't like these to go any longer than maybe they're about to go now. We could go on about all the other people you've spoken to in the sports.
Well, I'm
and
just
golf.
Glad that I've been able to come here and speak with you three.
We've asked you for a year for you to
for
come.
For you three
but you
to
did,
come along and you, talk to you three.
You did stick to your word. You said, when I'm down in Melbourne, you rang me up. And it's been fantastic to have you here, Craig
Thank you,
Willis.
John.
And thank you for coming into You Cannot Be Serious.
Thank you, Don. Thank you, Phoebe.
I'm open around the streets late at night. I'm worried because you ain't treating me right. back again.